The Around the NFL Podcast. Give zero about the new Star Wars.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined by a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What's up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
That definitely wasn't Mark's opinion, I can tell you that.
Yeah, that was my favorite drop yet, but Mark produced a sour face.
Well, the new Star Wars, number one.
That's it's not the new Star Wars?
It's not the name of it, but...
Well, like anyone knows the name, or we don't know the name.
Yeah, normal people
the
don't.
The Force Awakens, but I'm not some TD, like, sci-fi nerd, but yeah. It's the first movie that I saw with my dad, as I've stated before, and so it has a meaning
to me.
You
don't have to apologize.
No, but I can see that something was absolutely missing from the childhoods of others.
I said downstairs, you know, I sometimes draw criticism in certain circles, whether it be in the newsroom or on Twitter, for being a hater of the Star Wars franchise. I'm not. I just can't avoid it, and that gets a little annoying. But at the same time,
which makes you a hater.
Yeah, I guess so.
I wouldn't call you an advocate, a kind advocate of the franchise.
Right, but I don't judge people for it. I want to make that
clear. Yes, you do.
Not really. And, you know, the new Rocky movie coming out, Creed, I will be at that theater by myself on Friday. That's kind of like my Star Wars, something I'm really excited about. So I get it. And there's not a lot of difference between Creed and the new Star Wars when you think about it. Two dormant franchises that are trying to relaunch to a new generation and make a ton more money.
I want to see Creed. That looks good.
Well, one is taking place in the world where humans exist. And the other has, you know, men dressed up funny robot outfits and, like, animal, you know, skins and whatnot.
Well, Greg, I realized that you were, like, basically born to Earth at age 33. That you had no childhood that we can detect. So I'm not surprised by your commentary.
That's true.
Both movies came out originally 40 years ago. Approximately. Yeah. 1976.
And some terrible ones came out about 20 years ago.
Welcome back to another Around the NFL Podcast, our second in 2 days. I love it. This will be our big preview show of the rest of the week 12 games, that are not being played on Thanksgiving Day. So we previewed on Tuesday's show. Make sure you check that out if you haven't yet. The three games on Thanksgiving, Eagles, Lions, Panthers, Cowboys, Bears, Packers. But guess what? There's 32 teams. No teams on bye. Three games played on Thursday, which means 13 games to be played on Sunday and Monday. So check out.
The accent kind of went away like what's that movie? No, I'm blowing it.
Your affectation changed. That was more childlike.
Okay. You really blew it.
He's an evolving character.
You're not going to come up with it?
It's going to haunt me for the rest of the show.
It's a...
you know, some actors where they have the Boston accent, and they'll kind of come and go during the.
Oh, I know where you. I know where you're going. Jack Nicholson
in
The Departed. Came and went, an Oscar award-winning actor.
Kevin Costner in playing one of the Kennedys.
So there you go, Costner, Nicholson, Hansis. It happens to all of us. Sometimes you don't like hold it against them. You just keep moving on with their brilliant careers. So yes, a lot of games to get to. And we're going to do that. We also, a little later in the show, we have stopping by Michael Berger, who is a producer for NFL Network. He's a huge fan of the podcast, from what I understand. Is that correct, Greg?
Former guest of the podcast. And not just any producer. He's the producer of our TV arm of the show around the NFL.
Right. And we'll get into it a little bit when Berger gets in here. How he came to be on the show for a second time, which will be today on the eve of Thanksgiving. And then we'll talk about some games with Berger, who's a big Cincinnati Bengals fan. So Wes and Berger have a little connection there.
Well, I'm not a fan.
Okay.
We're both from Cincinnati, though. He likes the Bengals for some reason.
So, yes, we'll get into all the games to be played on Sunday and Monday. And I think we should get right into it because we got a lot to talk about. So why don't we start right away, gentlemen, with the 1 o'clock games on Sunday. Yes, the Minnesota Vikings coming off a tough loss to the Packers at home. They wanted it to be, yes, Greg, a statement game against Green Bay. Instead, they fell into a tie atop the NFC North, but still all good at 7-3. They get the Atlanta Falcons, who once upon a time, were they 5-0?
That's correct.
Yeah.
Wow, so now they're 6-4. You know, the division is long gone. They're four games behind the undefeated Panthers, and now they're just trying to hold on for a playoff spot. Greg, I'll start with you on this one. Your thoughts on this matchup? The Falcons are a hard team to get behind no matter the opponent, and now they have an NFC team that's won 7 of its first 10 games.
Well, I think this is the biggest game of the entire rest of the season for the NFC wildcard race. It's not the game I'm most excited about, certainly for the rest of the season or even this Sunday at 1 o'clock, but it is the biggest game. I don't think there's really any argument because the winner of this game, especially if it's Minnesota, is in great position for that bye. But if Atlanta wins it, they're 7-4. They have a much, I would say, an easier schedule than Minnesota the rest of the way. And suddenly that second spot is a lot more up for grabs. Atlanta will have a good chance for it. It'll be a little tougher for teams like Seattle and Tampa to catch up. So even though Atlanta's been in a bit of a free fall, they're losing close games. I don't think Minnesota's a team that I trust to go on the road and blow anyone out. I think this should be a close game.
Atlanta's offense against the Colts last week, you know, a lot to be desired, both the passing game and the running game, especially when Devonta Freeman went out and he's not going to play this week. Minnesota, you're right, Greg, they had the second toughest schedule of any team in the league down the stretch. After this game, they play the Seahawks and the Cardinals. So you got to take this game, and I think this is a winnable game for the second best defense in the league.
And Matt Ryan has had a bad season, or what you would call mediocre season by his standards. This was the week after they blew that game against the Colts where it started to bubble up, where the criticism started to really come out. And there were questions, is this guy healthy? How is he, you know, because he missed a lot of throws in that game in addition to a terrible pick six. So Ryan will be facing more scrutiny in this game. He cannot lay another egg at home, or he's going to be primarily responsible for this team's free fall out of playoff contention.
What do the Falcons do well? Get the ball to Julio Jones. Yeah. Other than that, I can't think of anything.
They were running the ball well. I would have said that, you know, you could have said
it's
that.
It's been
earlier.
A month since they ran the ball
well. Yeah, it's dried up completely.
I don't know. I know what the Vikings do well. They run the ball, and they have a good defense. And Teddy Bridgewater makes a pretty throw or two every game.
In theory, they rallied to the ball. You know, they
did in September.
A decent team defense. No, I think you're right. I think this is a game that Minnesota should take care of. And you're right, Dan. That's the first time I can remember, even during Atlanta's struggles the last couple of years, there wasn't a lot of coaches and players coming out saying, we still believe in Matt Ryan. That's a fairly new phenomenon,
necessary.
Really, for the – and he's a 30-year-old. You know, he's right in the middle of his career. Just having – I don't know what it is.
Well, I think
he's
maybe –
he's not having that bad of a year. What the heck's going on here?
Well, that's what this week has been like in Atlanta, though. People have been – Dan's
right. Not having that bad of a year.
I think a lot of fans look at – he had 3 interceptions. One of them wasn't his fault. It's the end of the game. But Brock Osweiler in Denver, when he can finally run the rollout offense that is Kubiak's signature moment, that is the same offense in many ways as this Atlanta offense. And suddenly Matt Ryan's having to do that himself for really the first time in his career to that degree. And I just think it's next year we're going to get a better version of Matt Ryan if Kyle Shanahan's still around. He seems to be having trouble adjusting to this offense.
Absolutely. Look at the top MVP candidates this year. Tom Brady, Cam Newton, Carson Palmer, Aaron Rodgers, Andy Dalton have all been in their offenses for, what, 5 years at least?
Makes a difference.
It takes a while.
I want to see Teddy Bridgewater bounce back from a perform. I thought he played really well last week. This is a defense that he shouldn't face much of a pass rush at all. And I think the weapons around him are kind of coming around. Kyle Rudolph's playing pretty well. Stephon Diggs, light it up.
We all picked the Vikings in this game.
Wow.
Which tells you a lot about what's happened with the Falcons the last 6 weeks or so. So we'll see how that shakes out. Moving on to the next 1 p.m. game to talk about. This game will be on Fox, and it'll be the New Orleans Saints at 4-6, and now with a new defensive coordinator, Dennis Allen, replacing the jettisoned Rob Ryan, who had an eventful stop by at NFL Network this past Sunday. I believe he made a Katrina reference, made a lot of jokes, didn't tuck in his shirt. It was a classic Rob Ryan appearance. But now the Saints got to move on and try to save a season that's on the brink of slipping away. There's been too many of these in recent years for New Orleans. They get the Texans, who are playing excellent defense right now. They just beat the Jets. They are atop the AFC South at 5-5. Chris Wessling, we've been talking about them this week a lot. I mean, this is a team that we can't assume they're going to beat anybody, but they're starting to look like a real playoff team potentially.
Yeah, when I look at this matchup, you know, if this was 2 or 3 weeks ago, I would have said the Saints offense is the best unit in this game. But I don't think it is. I think the Texans defense is the way they're playing. It was right around this time last year when J.J. Watt just, you know, exploded. He was sitting on eight and a half sacks, and then he had, what, 12 over his final six or seven games. And I think he's going to do the same thing this year. I think Whitney Mercilus, who's really flown under the radar, is in the top eight this year in the NFL in tackles behind the line of scrimmage. And, you know, Mark mentioned their rookie cornerback Kevin Johnson playing well. Jadeveon Clowney's playing really well. And their second-round pick, Bernardrick McKinney, is really coming alive at inside linebacker, too. They're the best third-down defense in the NFL.
And the worst unit in this game is the Saints' defense, specifically their passing defense. Four more touchdowns allowed in three straight games through the air. That's a disaster. This is an opportunity, again, for DeAndre Hopkins to blow up, because what we're not seeing with Sammy Watkins and what's getting a lot of press in Buffalo is he's just not getting targets. But in Houston, they're doing the right thing. This is your star player, and they're going to him over and over and over, and he could have a big day here.
I don't want to – the Sammy Watkins stuff, too, it's not all in the Bills' scheme and the quarterbacks. Like, that guy's always hurt. So he's been unable to get into any flow in his NFL career through 2 years. Hopkins is on the field, and he makes the most of his targets no matter the quarterback. I think, Wes, and I think maybe a rankings list to come up, whether it's this season or in the offseason, I think you could make a case that he's the number one wide receiver now. And you also have to factor in his production. He has better production than anybody at Hopkins, and he's got no quarterbacks, really. I think he might be the best now.
I have made a wide receiver rankings. Thanks for reading it, Dan.
Yeah, you're welcome. When?
It was about, I would say, 4 weeks ago or so.
Okay. Well, I can't read everything.
I don't know, maybe 6 weeks ago. It was before everyone realized that DeAndre Hopkins was awesome. But I would have a hard time putting him over Antonio Brown and Julio Jones.
I would put Brown number one. To me, that's easy. I think he is playing at a level right now I can't really remember seeing anyone, or at least as high a level. Hopkins is right there, though. And the one thing he does have with Brian Hoyer, which is, you know, Brian Hoyer's not a great quarterback, Brian Hoyer is just going to throw the ball to him 14 times a game.
Well, are you sure? Because T.J. Yates would throw it to him.
Or T.J. Yates is going to throw it to him, too. Ryan Mallett's going to throw it to him, too. I mean, his targets for this season are absolutely outrageous.
Crazy.
And they're right. He doesn't need to be open, and he usually is.
Back to Antonio Brown. What happened when you took one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL?
It's a fair point. When you gave him the caliber of quarterbacks that DeAndre Hopkins has been catching passes from all year, he disappeared.
They didn't throw the ball. I don't care. The things that he does with the ball – and on his routes are just exceptional. But we're picking between, you know, the best players in the league.
I hold in my hands. Get excited, everybody. The 2015 season, week 12 research notes.
Damn. This is getting distasteful.
90s week.
It is Brian Hoyer's twin, though.
Yeah, there you go. Very good, Mark. Yes, Ed Kowalczyk of Live.
Don't pretend that was intentional.
That nailed it. It was in my mind the whole time. Matt Money Smith gave me some guff a couple weeks ago that I had sent out a tweet last year at some point naming the top five Live songs. In my defense, I was almost certainly drunk.
Yeah, I'm sure that happened in a nearby tavern after about three games of pool and more beers than that.
All right. From the research notes, the Texans owe their current three-game winning streak to their defense. Opponents are scoring just 9.7 points a game over a three-game streak, and the Texans have a +5 turnover differential in that span. So Hopkins has been great, and, you know, T.J. Yates has done the job, but it's the defense. The defense could take them all the way to the playoffs.
Where's the red flags from Damashek's show? Poor use of the research packet.
Whoa.
You're just repeating the same stuff I already said.
Woo-wee. Wait, why are you being so cantankerous with me today, Wes?
I don't think I am. I think that was the first time, wasn't it?
No, but you're like, I wrote about that, Dan. Thanks for reading my material.
Well, I feel like you've been undermining everything I've said.
Wow.
It's about me.
This is great. We have a lot of different types of heat on this
Wes,
show.
What is going on
Not
with you?
Not enough Wes.
Where is this coming
Dan
from?
Heat. That's a new
That's
one,
why
though.
I'm so shocked. These attacks.
You know I've been, you know, hot and cold on your research packet usage.
Right.
And all year you've been using it pretty well, but today you just repeated what I already said.
I would like you to keep your opinions to yourself.
Whoa.
When it comes to my research packet, if you're going to have this attitude.
We'll see.
So anyway. Positive opinions only about the research packet going forward.
I have my own research packet. It's right inside my brain. And
it's shuffled.
Listeners, Greg pointing to his head while he says that.
And it tells me to tell Sean Payton out there, hey, in key spots of the game, let's maybe not give short yardage carries to Tim Hightower. What's going on? Tim Hightower hasn't been in the league for 4 years. They give him big carries against the Redskins. What was that? C.J. Spiller, too. Feed Mark Ingram. What's so underused?
We all pick the Texans. I was just waiting for Greg to finish his point so I could get back to undermining Wes's career. I have a lot to get to destroy Wes. That's why I'm here. Moving on, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers playing very well. Wes, stop me if I step on any of your points for the rest of the show. With Jameis Winston playing at a Pro Bowl level, 5 touchdowns in Sunday's win. Now they travel to Indianapolis, and here's the problem for Jameis Winston and the Bucs, who are putting their season back together, 5-5. But now Mark Sessler, Matt Hasselbeck, who literally cannot be defeated in the NFL.
Coming off of watching last week's Colts game, I would say if you made a list of the teams you thought would be exciting before the year and where they are now, the Colts would be the number one team for me that is more boring than I thought. Mm. And the Bucs are the exact opposite, where I thought they were going to be an impossible watch, and they are one of the more exciting teams in the league. I think Tampa Bay...
Sounds like a column.
Maybe so, after the break, not today. But I'll tell you something. Tampa Bay, who waxed the floor last week with the Redskins, I think they're going to go and do it again.
Excellent points, Mark. I would not dream of
Thank you, Chris.
I would not dream of undermining anything
Stunner.
You just said there, because
Wes siding with a Sessler point. The old critics corner over there.
I thought that was well said, considering what we thought of these teams earlier in the year, entering the season. The Bucs are the much stronger team right now between these two teams.
Fair
Get
point,
a room.
Wes. Good
Get
job,
a room,
Wes.
The old fogies.
It's not like the Bucs are just doing it once. I mean, the first half that they had against the Redskins, they explode fast. 355 yards in the first half last week against Philadelphia is outrageous. And Jameis Winston, he's not playing at a Pro Bowl level, by the way. That's a little much. I mean, that means you're one of the top
six
quarterbacks in the league. Okay,
last
couple of weeks. Yeah. That's fair. I think he is doing something that quarterbacks that have been making a lot of money for a lot of time don't do. Jay Cutler never anticipates throws. Ryan Tannehill never anticipates throws. Jameis Winston throws passes to spots. DJ, Daniel Jeremiah, on the Move the Sticks podcast kind of pointed this out. You know, he's anticipating. He throws balls in the tight window. He's a lot of fun to watch.
Great point, Greg.
Thanks.
Really good stuff.
Thanks, Dan.
You really – I thought you did great work there.
Yeah, this is an unnatural alliance, but I love it. I like it.
It also feels largely phony. It is a largely phony union, but
I'll take
you on.
No, good points. We all, by the way, took the Bucs in this game, except for the renegade Connor Orr, who has taken the Colts. His renegade ways, I passed him in the pick standings. But I still feel like he could be someone to watch just because he's fearless.
He's interesting.
Well, this is a rare case. He's picking the favorite, and he's all by himself.
The Colts are favored?
Yeah, fan consensus as well.
They're in Indianapolis.
Well,
they're
the fans are still catching up
to
the Bucs.
They did just win a game. I know you don't want to count it. They did just win a game in Atlanta. They're 5-5. They've got the same record as the Bucs.
Bad team.
All right, let's quickly get through this next game because it's the San Diego Chargers, who are a tough watch. It's like watching a Greek tragedy unfolding before your very eyes for 4 quarters. They head to Jacksonville to face the Jaguars. The 4-6 Jaguars, barely beat the Tennessee Titans in primetime. They did get a win, though, and that's enough to keep you in the mix in the AFC South. Ironically, the only team our fork exercise, the only team that we didn't fork besides the Colts was the Titans, and they are done. They're 2-8, most likely. But Houston and Jacksonville still in good shape here. Jacksonville's got to win this game. Wes, let's put our differences behind us now and move forward together as a unit. Jacksonville's got to win this game.
Absolutely, and they picked the right opponent because San Diego's terrible. And it seems like, I don't know, Greg referenced the Cleveland 95 scenario. This team is running on fumes, doesn't seem particularly interested in playing football right now.
And yet I would be surprised if the Jaguars won a game convincingly. They are 4-6, and they've lost a couple of close games too, but they could easily be 1-9. I think in terms of what they've done on the field, I root for this team. I love Bortles. I love the receivers. But I think if you're just watching the team on a week-to-week basis, they're one of the worst teams in the NFL. They're lucky to have four wins. And some of these are crazy endings and very fluky endings.
Well, and one of them, they shouldn't have won. So you're right. But I go back to the game against the Bills in London where there was a quarter, and I guess I realized they were playing E.J. Manuel. But I thought that the story of that game was going to be that the vision of what this team was going to be, that was the turning point where they suddenly got hot and were hard to beat. And that didn't happen. You're right. They're still struggling. But I would say right now, let me ask you a question. If you could take the Chargers, you're a coach, you can start a team with the Chargers roster or the Jaguars. And I think this answer would have been easy a year ago, 2 years ago. Whose would you take?
It's a good question.
I know what I do. I would go Jaguars without even thinking about it.
It's a tough one because Phillip Rivers is a franchise quarterback.
I think Bortles will be too.
I love Bortles.
He's also, what, 10 years younger than Rivers?
Yeah.
I think I would take the Chargers. I don't think – the roster isn't that bad. I don't think there's – put it this way. There's definitely not much difference in terms of talent between these two teams right now. I think the Chargers are probably a little more talented. They've lost a lot of close games. It's close, though. I mean, the Jaguars on offense with the receivers are certainly more exciting.
We took the Jaguars across the board in that game. So
how often is that happen?
Jacksonville – it's probably you can count it on one hand in the history of this podcast. So don't let us down, guys. By the way, a lot of good feedback on Twitter, our Spotify playlist, which I believe is now up to 25 songs.
Wow.
A lot of people excited about it. I think originally had 18, but the listeners came through, pinging us with different songs that we've overlooked. So it's up to 25. It's a hit machine. It's the next Thriller. That's how I look at it.
We
can't make any money off it.
Oh, I was going to say, could it be
the next Thriller, except for the minor fact that it's not us producing the songs or singing.
Right. I guess just in terms of how it can grab the culture.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Gotcha.
Just not let go for a period.
As a phenomenon?
Yeah, not just months, but years.
Well, it feels like a good modern-day Thriller where really we did nothing artistically other than pick songs. That's kind of how things blow up now versus back then it was a handcrafted album wire to wire hit by Michael Jackson.
Well, it's really catching on. I was over at NFL Now and the researcher over there, Colleen, they were listening to Corona, which is really the song of the Around the NFL podcast.
Hey, every man, does the researcher have a name?
Mark.
All right, good. Just testing. Testing your every man status.
Okay.
I don't know if you had a no eye contact policy with the researcher.
Well, I didn't know if our listeners would really have know who Mark was. Plus, it's confusing.
I don't think it's that confusing. But
well, there's Mark, the research guy that you were talking to.
He has a last
name. Colleen was involved.
Mark Sessler, the co
common man. He has a last name.
Mark Messier.
It's Bulgarian.
It was Dulgarian.
Bulgarian. There you go.
And he is the
great
one
guy
who suffered through about 1,000 Now hits last year when we were in the studio one-on-one with hosts. He had to sit in the corner and listen to all that nonsense. So he's done a lot of hard work.
All right.
I like Dan trying to come at me with his common man rankings. Give me a break.
You know, get back in your strawberry
truck. Why don't you put on your fancy sweater for the group?
Strawberry truck. Get back in your truck. Go drive up and down the Eastern Seaboard.
We are less than 24 hours from Thanksgiving, and all there is in here is heat and controversy.
Yeah, that's a lot of families.
Four guys, four different cars after this.
You should have seen some of the Thanksgivings with my family growing up.
moving on at a big AFC game here between the Buffalo Bills at 5-5 and the Kansas City Chiefs at 5-5. Two different situations, though. The Bills continue to be an up-and-down team. They, in my opinion, kicked away a chance to knock off the Patriots on Monday night. And they now face a Chiefs team that is now 5-5 after winning four straight games. And they've looked damn good doing it. They're kicking butt in these games as well. So it's hard to win, Mark, in Arrowhead. It's even harder to win when that team, the home team, is playing as well as the Chiefs right now.
This may be one of the better matchups because you've got Kansas City's defense, which is creating turnovers, stopping the run, shutting teams down, hurting quarterbacks. And you've got the Bills, which, despite what we just talked about with Sammy Watkins, lead the league in big play touchdowns, which are plays of over 25 yards with 16 and six of them on the ground. They remain one of the more electric offenses in the league when they are healthy. And they are healthy right now for the most part, so this should be fun.
But they haven't been that offense for, 3 weeks? And they've been healthy. I mean, since Tyrod Taylor is back, the last 2 weeks has been as the, his worst two games of the entire season. And it feels a little bit like Ryan Fitzpatrick, maybe even, you know, worse, that the early excitement and the bloom is kind of coming off the rose. And you see this with a lot of quarterbacks. They'll have five or six good games, and then teams figure out what to do. I think the Jets sent a lot of pressure towards Tyrod Taylor and the Bills' offensive line, and they didn't know what to do with it. They kept Taylor in the pocket. That's exactly what the Patriots did. They blitzed a lot more than they usually do, and Taylor really struggled.
Have we found a way to put the bloom back on the rose yet?
No, because once it's off, it's off.
We wrote off Alex Smith earlier in the year, and he's been playing pretty well, but this defense, they have an average margin of victory of 23 points over the last four games. They haven't allowed more than 18 points since October 4th in a game. The Chiefs are the better team in this game.
They're one of the best teams in the NFL over the last month.
Well, one thing that helps, they have not turned the ball over in 4 weeks.
I don't know how they did it, but the Chiefs managed with their 1-5 start to kind of make themselves interesting. Well, they would have been ranked about 31 or 32 on my least interest, you know, on the most interesting teams. But just because they started 1-5,
they're still 32nd,
and they lose Charles, and then they just start blowing teams out, I'm intrigued by them.
Well, they'll be the first team since 1990 to make the playoffs if they're 1-5, but they feel like they have a good chance because of how crappy the AFC is in general.
Well, this is the AFC equivalent of the Falcons-Vikings. I don't think it's quite that big a game, but whoever wins this game. Really? You think so?
Bigger, because these two teams are actually pretty good and the Falcons stink.
That's fair.
How about a loser goes home match right here? It's got the tiebreaker involved now with this game.
Well, Buffalo will go home to Buffalo.
Oh, like in like physically?
Yeah, they'll get on a – they'll probably pack it up right after the game, get on a plane, fly east.
That's not like exactly what I was getting at, but you're not wrong.
Well, you're probably not wrong either. Now we have an alliance.
This is the two the two teams that are most likely to make us donate to a local charity, by the way, the Chiefs and the Bills. There are many teams out there, but I would put these two at the top of the list.
Also two teams that have been letting down their fan base consistently for 30 years almost. So.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not quite ready to see one of them surge into the spotlight. Where did we go with that game? That was the Buffalo Bills contest against the Chiefs we were just talking about.
All right.
Wow, we all took the Chiefs.
We're in lockstep this week.
Yeah. Moving on, the Miami Dolphins are 4-6. That's the bottom of the AFC East. But again, in the muddled wild card picture, they're still in the mix. But they got a win on Sunday. And guess what? They got a matchup that could be to their advantage. The New York Jets playing awful football for a month now. Not a great home team. Never really have been. So this is not a game where you should look at the Dolphins as heavy underdogs by any stretch. This is a coin flip game. Again, I pick the Jets every week. I just can't help myself. I always do. But doesn't mean I necessarily think they're going to win. The only thing I have going for me is Ryan Fitzpatrick keeping his job over Geno, which was absolutely the right move, and trimming his beard. A little mojo shift.
You like that?
I'm in. Yeah. Got to do something.
You also have the fact that Tannehill.
Got Quentin Coples, too. You know, shake things up a little bit.
Yeah, that was the juice needed to change New York
City. This is the Quentin Coples Bowl?
That's right.
Coples Bowl.
Coples.
Did you see the report that Rex tried to claim him on waivers, too?
I am the least surprised person ever about that. He wasn't awful in his first 3 years with Rex. He had 16.5 sacks. He had between 5 and 6 sacks every season. So he wasn't, you know, a total bust, but he just wasn't a fit with Bowles. And I think he sent a message by dumping a former first-round pick.
This was the hardest game for me to pick this week just because of how bad the Jets have been lately, and I don't trust the Dolphins' offense. I do think the Dolphins' defense is playing pretty well. Rashad Jones, I think, has been the best safety in the NFL this season.
Wow.
Continues to play well. I end up picking the Dolphins in this game. I just don't know what the Jets are right now. What are they, Dan?
I used to think I knew what they are, but now all that stuff's out the window because they're not running the ball consistently and their defense isn't creating turnovers anymore and the secondary isn't shutting down passing games. And we don't even know if the Jets will have Darrelle Revis. He's not practicing as of this taping. He has a concussion. And Todd Bowles seemed to indicate there was a real chance he was going to miss this game on Monday when he said that he hadn't made any progress at all from Sunday to Monday. So That is something to watch. If Ryan Tannehill can take advantage of anything, which I'm not certain, he might have a chance to go against a secondary without Revis.
Well, especially against a team that has one receiver. Jarvis Landry isn't a top five NFL receiver, but he's having a great season. And the fall off from Landry to the next guy, who I guess is what, Kenny Stills, Rashard Matthews.
Oh, Kenny Stills.
Rashard Matthews has not been in the mix lately.
Kenny Stills is sneakily having a horrible season.
Yes. They're frustratingly boring all around. Sue is playing well. Vernon's playing well, or he played well last week. Jones is playing well. Grimes is a good player. But other than that, not much to get excited about.
You might be surprised, Greg, to know that Rashard Matthews has more yardage than Landry.
Oh, yeah.
More touchdowns.
Stick that in your pipe and smoke
it. I don't care.
And he's averaging 15.4 yards per reception.
So he's basically better across the board.
He has 20 less catches, but every other statistic he's better.
Who do you think is a better player and is having a better season?
I think Landry's better, but you are overstating how good he is. You said not even top five. He's not even a top probably 15 or 20 receiver.
I think he is.
He's their clear number two. And as we know with the Jets secondary, if you can get beyond Revis, even Revis wasn't a guarantee against Houston, but I look at that as an anomaly, you can have some fun against Antonio Cromartie and company.
I mean, the best quarterbacks do their best work inside the division. And Tannehill hasn't beat an AFC East team all year. And it's not just him. It's what's around him, I guess, on offense. But for me, the key, you look at New York's, you said it, Dan, like you look at New York's run totals from game to game, they were dominant early in the season, putting up huge totals, which was a great formula for their quarterback situation. And now it's completely dried up.
One thing to keep an eye on, it was actually Joe Philbin's last game as an NFL head coach. It was the last time these two teams met, and Chris Ivory went nuts in London, just ran all over this team. They need Ivory to get back to being that guy, or they have
no
chance.
He's not healthy, and he's almost never been healthy.
Which shouldn't be a surprise. You can't count on him to be healthy. That's on the Jets.
He has not been healthy since that first carry against the Patriots.
Since high school.
It's never been the same.
If the Dolphins don't win this game, I mean, this is Dan – not that we think Dan Campbell's going to keep
Campbell Bowl?
Next year, but Dan Campbell has to win a division game, or else there's absolutely no chance he keeps the job next year. Their only other division game left on the schedule is against the Patriots in
week
17.
Really think there's a chance he's keeping his job anyway?
If he won 9 games, so he'd have to go on a run. Yeah, I think if he went 4 games over 500 as a coach, he came in.
You know who the owner is.
Yeah.
He's going to go get a shiny new toy.
Yeah. Well, he's going to try.
Or at least look for one.
That's what Fergie does.
Fergie?
Fergie's one of the owners.
Oh, no, that's Serena Williams.
Well, Fergie, Serena, Mark Anthony.
This is an organization.
Big ownership group.
Remember they thought that was going to bring them like a lot of buzz and attention?
That'll get
the South Florida crowd to go to the games.
This is an organization that firmly believes in entertainment over football skill.
Fabio, Ricky Martin.
Well, you know what? They got a new guy running the show. His name is Mikey T, Mike Tannenbaum. Fan of the program, and he bring in Quentin Copeland, who he drafted. That's going to turn the whole franchise.
He's been
down
on the program.
How's that Tannehill contract looking right now?
I would say friend of the program, maybe. I don't think he's listening regularly.
Fine, friend of the
program. Not in his current role.
He was on. Not anymore, no.
Yeah. We like Mike T. tweets, though. Nice guy.
I like Mike T. He is a mensch.
Is that good?
Yeah, Tulane grad.
No, I meant the mensch thing.
That's why Greg likes it.
It's all good.
Get into that culture of yours.
This Tulane underworld is so concerning.
next up, the Oakland Raiders, who, society was once excited about, and now society no longer believes them to be exciting on some level. Now 4-6, fading from contention. Now they get a gift from the football gods, you would think. The scheduling gods, the Tennessee Titans on the road. But who knows? Who knows with the Raiders anymore? You never know who's going to show up. And on the other side of the ball, Marcus Mariota, he's a guy that, he could take any team for a ride. He's proven that this season. So you can't assume that they're just going to be terrible every week. Wes, this seems to be a game that I'm going to call a coin flip.
Yeah, they've sort of switched places here. Last year, Derek Carr had the worst weapons in the NFL to the point where we couldn't even accurately judge him as a quarterback because his receivers were so slow. He didn't have a running game. And now Marcus Mariota has – in last week's game, I was doing the Next Gen Stats article, and the Titans didn't have a single receiver who ran a faster speed than Anthony Fasano.
Wow. That's
their slow-moving tight end ran faster than all of their wide receivers.
So Anthony Fasano, you could describe as sneaky athletic?
You could. Right. Although I don't think anybody would consider him one of the league's fastest tight ends.
I think it's a statement on their offense more than some.
It is. And the running back is one of the slowest running backs in the NFL. There's no speed in this offense beyond their fast tight end, Delanie Walker.
This is one of those games where, like, the world's going to swallow itself up because the Titans, one of the worst running teams, bottom 10 easily, against a Raiders defense that has given up 567 yards over the last three games on the ground.
Wow. So 200 yards a game.
I'd run Mariota. Get that guy going.
They do need to run him more.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing with Mariota. He doesn't go deep, and he doesn't really use his legs that much.
So you're saying he's Alex Smith?
No. I think he's doing the things that can help them win the best. And right now, being crazy and being aggressive, he doesn't have the receivers for it. And so he's just a solid C+, B- every week. He's about as consistent a rookie as you'll ever see. He's pretty much the same guy. But he gets in a matchup like against the Jaguars on Thursday night, and he makes a few plays, and he doesn't make any mistakes. But he's not going to do enough with that talent surrounding him to win the game. I had the dumbest, by the way. Your whole argument about the Titans' skill position talent, the dumbest argument on the couch at NFL Now on a Sunday all year was – they were trying to tell me
NFL game day blitz.
NFL game day blitz. They were more people than not were saying that Mariota had better weapons than Jameis Winston.
No.
This is the most insane thing I ever heard.
Based on what player were they even pointing to?
I don't know. Who was this?
I was on I don't even remember.
That's a good answer.
Public shaming,
not enough for them.
Kevin Patra and the old Zeuser took the Raiders in this game. The rest took the Titans. And I didn't mention it, but Wes had said that he took the Dolphins. So did Patra. The rest took the Jets. Moving forward, gentlemen, the New York Giants are 5-5. And in the NFC East, that means you are on your way to a division title. They have one game lead over both the Redskins and Eagles, and a two-game lead over the 3-7 Cowboys. Oh, my God, what a bad division. Now they travel to Washington looking to bury the Redskins. A big game, obviously, with big playoff ramifications. There will be no wild card team coming out of this division, so you got to win these division games. Mark, your thoughts on this gridiron, old-school NFC East battle between two
Rates. It's the most confusing game of the week for me because both of them have flip-flopped wins and losses. The Giants for their last six, the Redskins for their last five, and that's what they are. They're both 8-8 type teams. New York's the best. I think maybe the best unit is New York's offense in this, and they probably have a better chance than Washington because Washington, to me, when they're good, we've had fun watching them. I love what they thought they could be early in the season, and they're just too inconsistent. But at the flip side, I don't know. I'm going to be all over the map because the flip side, this defense and Kirk Cousins, maybe it's a good Kirk Cousins game. I don't know. I'm not even going to watch it.
They made like two plays all of last week. Andre Roberts' kickoff return and DeSean Jackson's long touchdown pass. But that's against Carolina's defense. Now you get to play against the Giants defense, which is a whole different story. I'm picking the Redskins to win this game. It's kind of a coin flip game, but I think the Redskins are better than people think. So I'm going with them.
Mark's mood goes up wildly, up and down, based on what the Browns are doing. But I've noticed...
Well, that would just have me in one mood, wouldn't it?
It goes... That's true. It's pretty much just down. I've noticed the Redskins effect. Like, if they're coming off a loss, then you'll be really down on them. If they're coming off a win, then, it's back to the Cousins corner over here. Kirk Cousins for MVP. These teams aren't that equal. I think the Giants might build on their loss to the Patriots.
They are looking equal.
A little better.
Cousins corner is okay. Kissing Cousins.
Oh yeah.
Well,
you like that?
The Giants have outscored opponents by 20 points this year. The Redskins have been outscored by 32. That's a 50-point difference.
The Redskins
that's significant.
Have been right. The Redskins' offense has been injured all year. Now they're healthy. So
they have had in their wins. There is a lot of reason to get excited about the Redskins, but their losses have been terrible in some cases. So you're right. If you're going to follow that team, you are all over the map this season.
The Redskins, DeSean Jackson said this week, this game is for all the marbles, which I like that. I was like, no, you don't know.
It's like for a few of them.
You don't
know
what that phrase
it's like three
really
marbles.
Means. The Giants have had the Redskins' number. Apparently there's some beef between him and Amukamara. I can't remember.
There's always beef between the Giants.
They asked him about him. He's like, he's just another guy in the field. I wanted to point out, though, you know who's having a great season is Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie.
Yes,
he's having a Pro Bowl, one of the best, what, six or seven cornerbacks in the league type of season. He is something that defense can get behind.
He's another one of those guys who does it like every other year.
Yeah.
Him and Antonio Cromartie. It's a Cromartie curse.
It's in the genes.
Patra and myself again on the same island with the Giants, the rest with the Redskins. Wes, I think you'll like this one better. This is from the Week 12 research notes. And I think
Eagle Eye.
And I think one thing I know will always tickle Wes, a little teddy bear, giggle as I tickle him, is a little trivia where you can prove yourself to be a maven on NFL history and knowledge. So I'm going to give you a quiz, Wes.
All right.
Actually, I'm going to open this up to both Kissing Cousins. Both guys on that side of the table can chime in.
I might not respond to that title.
All right.
You can try me.
And, Sydney, can you help me out with a clock? Because we're going to give you 20 seconds. Here we go. I'll tell you when to start, Sydney. Eli Manning has started 177 straight games at quarterback, the longest active streak in the NFL. The Redskins have started 10 different quarterbacks over that span. Name 7 out of the 10. Give me a 20 seconds, Sydney.
Kirk Cousins, Robert Griffin. We've got Rex Grossman, Jason Campbell.
John Beck.
And
Colt McCoy.
Ooh, Colt McCoy. And then that's one.
Patrick Ramsey.
That's 7.
Keep going.
How many do we need to name?
Just name them. Name more. 20 seconds. Count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 out of 10. Very good. You did it.
Yeah, with plenty of time to spare.
Here's who you missed. Greg, do you know any?
No, I wasn't thinking.
So why did you shake your head when I said Patrick Ramsey?
I didn't. I misheard what the question was.
Mark Brunell.
We should have.
Todd Collins.
Playoff star.
Oh, I got another. Wait, did you say Beck?
Collins started the playoff game.
And this one, guys. Donovan McNabb.
How did you forget that terrible era? That was a depressing time.
Ill-fated Donovan McNabb era in Washington. More like error. Nailed it. Moving forward, the NFC West. We're tasked on NFL Now, where we do multiple hits per week. If you're interested, you check out. How do you find NFL Now, Greg?
NFL.com/now.
Sure, why not?
Or now.nfl.
It's on Apple TVs. It's everywhere.
All right, good. So
knock yourself out.
We do these game previews, and I was tasked with trying to set the boys up with a way to get into this game, the Arizona Cardinals at San Francisco 49ers. And I said, Wes, after two big showdowns for the Cardinals against the Bengals and Seahawks, could the 49ers serve as a potential letdown game? And, Wes, how did you respond? Extended laughter.
Skeletor laughter. Skeletor. On the edge of Skeletor.
Aslan.
Well, this is from the same guy who said Blaine Gabbert was looking pretty good.
It could very well be a letdown game, and the Cardinals might only win by 30.
Oh, stop.
All right, maybe 20.
Can you hear that, by the way? Listen closely. It's the Blaine Gabbert resurrection campaign.
Oh.
Because you're hearing some positive buzz around Blaine Gabbert. Honey Badger said this week, I think he's underrated. Blaine Gabbert on the comeback trail.
Called him much better than Kaepernick, right?
He did, and I agree with him. I think
nobody
Blaine Gabbert
Kaepernick.
Is playing well. And in that Honey Badger story, Bruce Arians also had a quote saying how well he thinks Blaine Gabbert is playing, that he thinks he's a good quarterback.
I thought when you were listening for that sound that you had picked up the sound of hubris coming from Chris Wessling and perhaps the rest of the Bird Gang out there. That's what we call us big Cardinals fans.
Okay. I think it's more of
Bird Gang.
Scorn and derision than hubris.
Coming off to – all I'm saying is if there ever was a letdown game, if that is a real phenomenon, maybe it's not, it's probably going to come in a dead stadium on the road in the division after two monster games on national television where you proved yourself.
Totally agree.
And against a team who has been frisky enough at home. They've been okay at home. Even last week, they were a little more competitive than we really expected once the last week already 20-0. I mean, when it's 20-0, you figure it's gonna end 37-0, and they come back and they sort of make it a game.
Oh, that makes total sense, except for the fact that the Cardinals have the most talented roster in the NFL, and the 49ers have the least talented roster in the NFL. They're running preseason lineups out there on offense.
Yeah, and I also look at teams that have these letdown games are often not the Patriots. It's not the best teams in the league. It's those halfway there teams that do something surprising, and then they cave in. This is not built this way. This team with under Arians, the way he's gotten them up game after game, I don't see them as letdown fodder.
And we all took the Cardinals, not surprisingly. Moving on. late game, the Pittsburgh Steelers with Ben Roethlisberger doing Big Ben things with his boy Antonio Brown head to CenturyLink Field to take on the Seahawks. The Seahawks, we know, do not have Marshawn Lynch. He could be out until the end of the regular season after undergoing sports hernia surgery. So that is a big loss. But at the same same time, Wes, Thomas Rawls is coming off the type of game that Marshawn Lynch has never had in his NFL career. Is he a guy that's going to cause this offense not to miss a beat, or will beast mode be missed?
If you think that the Seahawks are going to miss Marshawn Lynch, you haven't been watching them play this year. Thomas Rawls has outplayed him. Mm. I mentioned this Sunday night. Marshawn Lynch has rushed for 75 yards one time all year. Thomas Rawls has done it three times over 100 and has their two best games by a running back all year. And frankly, looks like he fits this offense better than Marshawn Lynch.
There are a few things sadder than thinking about fantasy owners out there that spent like a seventh overall pick on Marshawn Lynch and then didn't handcuff it up with Thomas Rawls. There's people out there that got stuck like that because you're right. Lynch has done nothing all year. He's never been close to the old Lynch this year. He's been banged up and ineffective, and now Rawls is maybe a better option at this stage.
It's crazy that Thomas Rawls, an undrafted rookie, is absolutely more valuable to their team than Jimmy Graham, the guy who gave up, you know, a first-round pick, has been an all-pro player. At this point, we're just kind of expecting Graham to get 3 for 39 every week. It's no longer even a big story. Here are some people. He has 530 yards on the season, which isn't the worst thing ever, but here's who else is right around him in the yardage race. Benjamin Watson, a couple ahead of him, replacing him in New Orleans. Doug Baldwin in Seattle. Danny Woodhead in San Diego. These are the players that are right around him. Danny Amendola, Marvin Jones. I mean, these are the types of company that Jimmy Graham is keeping right now.
The bigger number is two touchdowns. He's supposed to be one of the best red zone threats in the league.
Historically prolific in terms of production in New Orleans. I guess we figured it was going to go down, but I don't think anybody predicted he would be this unproductive.
You know, Bevel, though, when they do what they do, when you have a healthy running back, they're fine. The two times they've tried to plug star guys that they've added to kind of take that offense and make it more dynamic, Percy Harvin and Jimmy Graham, it's not been a very successful experiment. The first was an absolute disaster.
The Harvin thing, I can't really put on the OC at all, though.
He's always been banged up. That's fair, but the players talked about the way he was used and the lack of explosive plays from Harvin in that offense nearly tore that locker room apart before they went back to what they do.
The crazy thing is that the Seahawks are having this season where they're struggling and they're 5-5. And when you think of their defense, the strength is up front. Like, everyone always thought the secondary, that's how, you know, that's how this
Bennett,
defense was
Averill.
Built. Cliff Averill and Michael Bennett might be the best duo in the league right now. With Ware being hurt, they are there. Cliff Averill has been amazing. Bennett's been really consistent and great all year. They are playing better than they've ever played in this whole run. And yet the secondary, I know they were fine last week against San Francisco. They basically give up the same plays every week. I mean, they give up the big plays down the middle of the defense. Earl Thomas is very often involved in giving up the plays. Cam Chancellor has not been a great player for them in coverage at all. Not that that was ever his strong suit. And again, people are hitting him with those same plays.
I'm a little surprised that only one of us took the Steelers, and it was Connor Orr, the right renegade. are we kind of overlooking what the Steelers can do against the Seahawks defense that hasn't been nearly as good this season?
No, I think it was a coin flip game. I respect the Steelers, and I think they have the best wide receiver duo in the NFL right now, and I don't think it's even close. Martavis Bryant is an animal. That guy is incredible. Who else is better than those two guys? But you're playing in Seattle. If this game was in Pittsburgh, I think it'd be – I'd probably lean the other way.
I mean, this is the game that – you know, we're making our picks on Wednesday, and there's a lot more information to be learned before the games. But this was this one I might switch because I really look at Pittsburgh, and I understand the Chiefs and the Bills and all that stuff. Forget it. Wild card, they're not going to win the division, but if they get in as a wild card, I look at this team as one that could upset the apple cart entirely and go right to the Super Bowl, even without Le'Veon Bell.
I agree, and I think if they can win this game, and this is the best game of the week, it's one of the more interesting games of the season.
It is a good game.
Because Seattle right now to me is fascinating because they've been the best team in the NFL now for this is the fourth year where they're one of the where they should be one of the teams. And if they lose this game, it's like – They are running out of time, and I think Pittsburgh could go pick them off. And if Pittsburgh could win this game, Michael Berger, who's waiting to come on the show, doesn't want to hear it, but Pittsburgh could still win that division.
Yeah,
that's possible.
Mm. Still have Cincinnati left on the schedule.
That is a good game. CBS, that might be the Phil and GM game. Get excited about that. All right, now. Listen, I care about who's calling the games. Phil and GM. And by the way, Mike Tirico and Jay Gruden, or John Gruden, we talked about it. What a team.
Oh, yeah?
Tirico going off on the officials at the end of the telecast was, you know, classic Tirico.
They've been great.
What a pairing. Now, we move on to a man that needs an introduction. He is a producer for NFL Network, specifically the Around the NFL program. We are the Around the NFL podcast. He's a man with interesting insight on the NFL world. So we said, why don't we get the old Berger in here and, you know, toss it around a little bit.
I've got a prop to give Berger when he gives in, a little credit to give him.
Okay, good. Let's bring him in. Michael Berger, sitting to my left, to Wes's right. We need somebody between me and Wes today.
Sure do.
here is Michael Berger. Welcome back
to
the Around the NFL podcast.
I am truly honored. As I said, I looked it up. I think it was almost 2 years ago to the day that I was in here. And things you've come a long way in 2 years.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yes, we are incredibly popular.
the paparazzi's way. I had to get through them just to get in the door.
Well, we've been on your program, so that's been.
That helps. That helped, right? I think it's a sort of a symbiotic relationship. You guys have, you know, we're all one media group here, so we're getting all the insights, all the content, guys, all the content we can get.
Were you responsible for the name Around the NFL? That could be a better name. For both the show and the podcast.
If you had your druthers, what would you call these programs?
Stick to football.
Okay. I'll take that into the next meeting.
Imagine the Stick to Football podcast.
STF.com. That's probably already taken.
Crazy idea here. I think we should probably stop renaming our shows.
That makes sense.
Right.
I was not here the first time Berger was on the show.
Oh, really?
Oh, that's right.
So this is the first time I'm sharing a studio with Berger. I have goosebumps.
Absolutely.
But, Mark, you remember the last time Berger was here.
As does Wes. We got into a hot debate about the longevity and the success and the career of Colin Kaepernick versus Alex Smith.
Right.
And Berger went out on a limb to say that without any question, he believed that Alex Smith would be the better quarterback long term. And now this is two seasons ago,
right?
And I don't remember how the rest of us debated, but I know that I was on the other side of the fence.
100%. I think you all were.
I was wrong.
Berger.
I hammered him pretty hard and he was absolutely correct.
How do you guys remember this? First of all,
we have memories.
Well, Greg,
unlike
earlier
you.
In the show, you pointed to your head and talked about my brain. Well, that's where it's coming from. It's called recall.
And this is why Berger's back on the show, because he's correct in that one inane
segment.
Conversation exactly. 2 years ago.
Right. We waited as long as we could until Kaepernick was finally just
out of the league.
Bring back Berger.
Officially over. Yep. And then we're like, all right, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about.
He's earned it.
All right,
not only that, you sold out your girlfriend and made her wait for the DirecTV man just to come here.
I'm glad I'm here. Let's put it like that.
All right. So we want to talk some football?
Let's do it. Let's stick to football.
Yes. And why not, since you are a Cincinnati Bengals fan.
I am. Unlike Wes.
Let's talk about Cincinnati.
Deserter.
A big – what was that?
I called him a deserter.
Your thoughts, Wes?
I was born with a mind of my own. I'm not a sheep.
Right.
This will be a good podcast in the off season. Wes and Berger talk about being a Cincinnati sports fan.
I like
that.
Right.
But for now, let's talk about their game on Sunday. They're coming off back-to-back losses. They played pretty well on Monday night.
They did.
On Sunday night, but were defeated by a great Cardinals team. Now they get the Rams in their building, Berger.
Right.
A Rams team that, listen, you know, we can't make much sense of what's going on at their quarterback situation. Todd Gurley hasn't even been dominant in a couple of weeks. This seems well set up, yes or no, Berger, for Cincinnati to get back on track.
You'd have to think so. I mean, the Rams are, what, 31st in total offense?
Everything.
31st in scoring defense.
Watchability.
Watchability. Todd Gurley hasn't been Todd Gurley-like in the last few games. Earlier in the year, the Bengals were having trouble stopping the run, and if this game had been played in Week 6, I would have said that's a really bad matchup for the Bengals. Mm. I think they're 13th now in run defense. They were in the bottom five earlier
last
in the
month.
Year.
They've got to be top five.
Vontaze Burfict.
Yeah, he's back. That helps. So, I mean, I you'd have to think this feels like a Bengals win. Red zone's going to be interesting. I think both those teams are second in the league in red zone offense and defense, respectively. Mm. So, I think what happens down near the goal line will obviously play a big part. But we saw Case Keenum didn't really help things last week ignite the Rams offense. So you'd have to think this sets up for a Bengals win. I will say that obviously the tragic Stedman Bailey incident last night.
Yeah.
You'd have to think. Let's hope that doesn't factor into any. You know,
Bailey was involved in a shooting incident.
If you don't
know.
Yeah.
In his car. He underwent surgery today. I believe he's in critical condition.
Stable condition.
There's not a lot of information about what his situation is, but that is obviously terrible news. Back to football end of it, Greg. You said on our last week, you talked about Andy Dalton, how you hadn't seen the Andy Dalton of the earlier in the season, the last few weeks. Did you see enough on Sunday night to be back in and not be worried at all about Andy? He made some big throws in that game.
Yeah, he went down the field, which I think had been missing for a month. Although, on the key play of the game,
he missed a few.
He missed, really, if he puts that ball out there, they might win that game. And we're talking about what a performance. That easily could have been an interception on the play that AJ Green wound up catching out of bounds. And I think we've seen enough from him that it would be surprising if they had another big letdown game. But this is one of the best defenses in the NFL, so I wouldn't ever count it out.
Sure.
Why do we keep saying they're one of the best defenses in the NFL? Bears put like 37 points.
That was one game, and they were missing Quinn and Long in that game. Case Keenum, it looks like, is going to start despite that concussion. By the way, he's limited in practice.
You got to double down on that one if you're Jeff Fisher.
We talked about the fact that the Steelers are still coming up on their schedule. I mean, Cincinnati, what they've done all year is what the reverse is in the past, where they have that epic melt where suddenly they're not the Bengals we respect anymore and you're just looking at a January defeat. This is not that team, but they have to go in and stamp St. Louis to make that true.
I don't think the Rams are going to score enough points to hang in this game.
Not at all.
I'm taking a look. I know this is an offense that now runs through Gurley, but you look at their receiving stats. These are the receiving yards for their top four receivers, Britt, Cook, Austin, and Cunningham. 341, 321, 310, and 189. We're 10 games into the season, and these guys are on pace for all about 500.
Outside of Austin, this is like the fifth year in a row this has been the case with this dead-on-arrival offense.
They shouldn't be able to keep pace with Cincinnati.
The receivers are like, what, third or fourth on the list of problems, though? The quarterback, the offensive line, Greg Robinson has 15. He's been flagged 15 times for holding since he entered the league.
Great pick.
Orlando Pace was flagged 11 times in his entire career.
Wow.
So he's not Orlando Pace.
The fact that the Rams can't throw the ball sets up well for the Bengals, who their secondary is a mess right now after losing Darquez Denard for the year last year. Pac-Man still hurt.
It's a big loss.
Yeah, it's a big loss. Leon Hall has played in the slot this year and hasn't played all that well, frankly. Drake Kirkpatrick, I think, was in the bottom five of all corners in the league at Pro Football Focus as of 2 weeks ago. So they got some issues in the back end, and it's going to come up in games against the Steelers, like you mentioned. They still play the Broncos. Their schedule long-term, just looking at, obviously the Steelers only two games back, and you'd like to think that they'll be able to hold on. But the Bengals' schedule does set up well. They only have really the Steelers and the Broncos left. Their other four games are Rams, Browns, Ravens, and Niners.
Oof. So look out for those Browns.
That's perfect. You get a couple tests, but you get some cupcakes.
Which should be, right.
Just a question for the room. Who is there any person that's more overly emotional on a football Sunday than Michael Berger? I mean, he really gets a little too. And
Quiet Storm?
It's uncomfortable. But
not this year.
His is internal.
That's more burning intensity for
me. It's mostly my trash can that gets the brunt of the you know, but I try to keep it confined to my cubicle. A lot of yelling off of
a third down miss.
Got to make a play
quarter.
On third down. Get
NFL editor Mark Ortega could give you a run for your money. It's just general zaniness and wildness.
I've been vocal in my distaste for our move across the newsroom.
Yeah, that's right. We used to be neighbors.
Yeah, we've been banished to a corner like the guy with the red stapler in Office Space.
I love it.
And one thing I do miss is seeing the intensity, whether it's Reds baseball or Bengals football.
Right.
So I miss it, man.
Yeah, go all in or go home.
You going to panic if they lose this game? 21-20?
Absolutely.
Mark and I haven't said two words to each other since we made that move like 4 months ago.
Well, outside of that dynamic,
you guys
I love
right
it.
Guys sit next to each other. Right?
There's a Berlin
wall
right
between
us.
To it than that.
There's a wall
you
right between
You never
us.
Liked each other anyway. It's fine.
We took the Bengals
Not
across
true.
The board to get back in the win column and move to 9-2. Let's talk about Sunday Night Football. This was supposed to be an Alan Chris. You know, I love talking about announcers, Greg, as we spoke about earlier. They were supposed to get, you know, Brady Manning ball 46.
But instead, it's Osweiler Brady 1.
Yeah. So
Brady
there you go.
Brock.
There's the sell. Brady v. Brock.
Are they going to put those graphic, you know, they do the whole, like, Manning. Are they going to do Brady Osweiler 1 in big Roman numeral at the bottom of the screen?
That actually is
well,
the
that's
sort
what
of
they called it
winking
in our news
sense
notes.
Of humor that NBC think would do. Yes.
They're known for their subtle sense of humor.
They should.
Anyway, so the New England Patriots, 10-0. So you get excited. Oh, wow, 16-0. But they're not playing that great on Monday night. They didn't play that great. This is a short week for them. They're beat up, as we talked about. Berger, I'll set you up again for this.
Yeah.
There is a case to be made on the road in prime time against a great defense and a young Brock Osweiler looked promising, reigning player of the week, that the Pats are ready to go down. You buying?
I'm not. This is a tough one. I think, you know, at some point, the war of attrition has to – you know, they simply don't have anyone to throw the ball to anymore. I think you lose Deion Lewis, fine. You lose Edelman, fine. You lose Amendola. I mean, I LaFell and, James White's catching two touchdowns. I guess every year, this is the lesson. We say this, I feel like, every year about the Patriots is who is he throwing the ball to, and they still do it every year and win 14 games. So I think on some level, you have to start to really push the panic button. But at the same time, I'm taking Bill Belichick against a guy making a second career start all day, every day. And I think, listen, the Broncos defense, we all know, is probably the best in the league top to bottom. But I just, until I see Brock Osweiler have, I need a larger sample size to think that he's going to go beat Bill Belichick on Sunday night, whether it's even in Denver or not. I've taken the Patriots.
On the vibrant broadcast vehicle known as NFL Now,
yes.
Earlier today, I predicted that James White, 4 touchdowns, it's going to happen.
4 touchdowns.
And if not, Chris Wessling in the offseason will canoe from the Los Angeles port to Nicaragua.
Is that possible?
Wait, what Thor hired all of football writers.
Seems like a
I
really
don't know. It's just
trip.
Something
Wait,
more.
What if James White does get 4 touchdowns? No.
Then Chris Wessling will not canoe from Los Angeles
so he just
to Nicaragua.
Gets nothing you know what, in particular.
Either way, right. I'm not canoeing.
You know
anyway.
What's going to happen in classic Bill Belichick fashion? It'll be Brandon Bolden catching 4 touchdowns and not
possible.
James White.
Yeah.
And then you're not going anywhere either way, Wes, so you're fine.
On the same NFL Now story. You
Vibrant.
I had Brock Osweiler winning this game, and in our sponsor-mandated hot take of the week that we have to write every week, I also have Brock Osweiler winning. But I could never pick Brock Osweiler over Tom Brady. Of course I'm going to pick the Patriots in this game.
What do you mean? Why would you do it then for bold predictions?
I will,
because we have to come up with a hot take.
No,
it's mandated.
I will
all
say,
you have to do is
integrity
go
impugned.
Go through the games that you picked this week. I am certain.
I have like 17 other.
Pick it. Write about it.
I have 17 other things on my docket, and it's like the desk throws this. You have to come up with a hot take this week in order for a bold prediction. I'm like, all right. Let me chalk out 70 words on Brock Osweiler.
I will say that everybody who watched Brock Osweiler play, we all watched, I think, a portion or some of that game. I watched most of it. That's what the Gary Kubiak offense is supposed to look like.
Yeah.
And, he played better than I think most people expected. Is he going to, you know, can he do that against the Patriots on Sunday night? We'll see. But I
guess.
Think,
no downfield passes.
He throws.
He made didn't really throws. Show much, good or bad. And that's great for a first start. But this is the best Patriots defense, I think, in the last decade. And they can present problems
sure.
for you. Just
Jamie
like
Collins
did.
Coming back, too.
Yep.
They gave
just
him
like they
AFC
did for Tyrod Taylor, another young quarterback last week. So this could be a game in the teens. You
they
know?
Gave him AFC Player of the Week, Brock Osweiler.
What?
I know, because I don't know if it's because of just the situation he was in.
It was.
But it was a perfect passer rating. But if you watch the
I
game.
I want their job.
Right. If you watch the game, and listen, he managed the game well. That I agree with. But perfect passer rating means literally zero when you watch what he did to forge that.
You beat the Bears by 2 points.
He threw one good pass the whole game. He didn't make any mistakes.
Which pass is that?
He had
Vernon Davis on a third down slant and had another good pass that Owen Daniels dropped.
He also didn't turn the ball over, which has been the problem for Denver. So
but I mean, just from a schematic standpoint, there was a lot of play action. The tight ends were more involved. It's what we've seen from the Ravens and Texans. Yeah, it just it looked like
the running game came to life.
Absolutely. So
the fact that Vernon Davis got in the mix that much,
he looked good too.
I think was a huge positive and a huge sign of how much Osweiler helped. But watch out, you got. You know, Demaryius Thomas going on Butler Island.
We should mention.
Oh, stop it with that. Butler Island.
We should mention because this news came after we recorded yesterday's podcast. Peyton Manning team announced out at least the next 2 weeks. Right. At least he's going to be in a walking boot. And I think it's natural to wonder if he ever plays for the Broncos.
Very fair to ask that.
I think if Brock Osweiler plays at the level he played last week, there's little chance that Manning plays again. Now, if he really struggles and Manning does prove he's healthy again in 3 weeks, then who?
Osweiler just fits this offense so much better.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I took the Broncos in this game. I am alone. It is a hero pick, or it was until Greg came along.
Oh, you don't pretend that you think I ruined this thing. You love it.
Sure, buddy. Finally, Monday Night Football. And
do
what
we
a,
have to? We have to?
What a bummer. Yeah. What a bummer.
Listen, everyone wants to see Matt Schaub against Josh McCown. Come on. That's what they're tuning in for on Monday night.
It's a funeral.
ESPN was so desperate to find a way to play this game, an angle to take on it, that all throughout Monday Night Football this week, it was just a really kind of odd, like a staccato type massive cutaways and all these different, all this Johnny Manziel. Ooh, Johnny Manziel, like, football,
it,
Johnny.
It was different, like John Gruden. It was like, oh, Johnny Football, you gotta love him, Johnny Football. And then it's like him like running around, and it was just like Johnny Football Monday night. And then in like fine print, it says Ravens Browns.
Exactly. And it's like, how are we now supposed to take this game seriously as a piece of entertainment to watch Manziel back on the bench, as we said on yesterday's podcast, because of his hard partying lifestyle, or just being out and ticking off the team enough where they said, you're now our third string quarterback. So it's Josh McCown back in the lineup against, Matt Schaub, who replaces Joe Flacco, who tore his ACL and MCL last Sunday. So, this is a game that's going to be hard to get excited about, especially when you're talking about two teams that are combined 5-15 this year. I say don't televise it. Put on, you remember like the ESPN Strongman competition?
Oh, yeah.
Put that on.
Magnus Ver Magnussen?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Candlepin bowling?
What a phenom.
How about let's make this the Heidi game, too. Around midway through the third quarter, just put Heidi on.
Or, like NBC and now Fox is getting into like doing the musicals. Like, just throw something together in the next 4 days. Get a musical out there. Fiddler on the Roof, Much Ado About Nothing, maybe.
How about a musical starring Matt Schaub and some of the players?
They'll throw an interception.
What would you call that?
Yeah, I don't know.
Pick six?
Yeah.
Definitely wouldn't be hair.
Yeah. So this game,
Well, we can't talk, Wes, so yeah.
That's why we can't talk.
I know. That's true.
So here we go. This is the game that's happening. Anybody have anything to say about it? We all took Cleveland, but I think initially it was before Manziel. What do you got to say, Wes?
Anybody want to trade shifts on Monday?
Oh, that's all you got to say?
Forget about it.
Come on. Mark,
I've covered every Monday night game, which I enjoy, but this game, come on, I'd give it up in a heartbeat.
Mark, you have to root for them to win on national TV, even though you're saying, oh, I'd like to have the number one overall pick. When push comes to shove.
Why? You'll just mess it up. You don't want the number one pick.
Well, I won't. I would like to see them win. And here's one thing. I have a quick comment, and I have a question for Berger to start off with.
Yes.
But I think Mike Pettine, this was the most defining decision he's going to make as the Browns coach for a long, long time, and I think he made the right one. If you listen to the players in that locker room, to a man, they feel like he did what was right for the team, and he stood by it, and I respect Pettine, and John Harbaugh said the same thing. It's not easy to have done this. It goes against everything that makes Cleveland even marginally marketable. But question, you got Kaepernick and Alex Smith right 2 years ago.
Right.
Johnny Manziel versus Blaine Gabbert. Career going forward.
Do they have careers going forward?
Oh.
I mean,
I just like that this – now we can start the clock in another 2 years before Berger's back on, and then we'll have the
That's
answer.
That's right, yeah. December of 2017. God, I don't know. I mean, in all seriousness, listen, Blaine Gabbert is a career backup and will be. And I don't think he's. I mean, to have him, to someone say we're giving you the keys to the kingdom, I don't see that happening anytime soon. Johnny Manziel, listen, I mean, do we think someone's taking a shot on this guy? He's not playing for the Browns anymore after this year. We think so.
I don't know. Maybe.
I don't know.
I don't know.
We haven't done a podcast since they officially announced it.
Right.
We expect that McCown was going to be the starter, but they officially announced McCown's the starter, but he didn't even say for the rest
of the year.
Greg's
right.
Memory fails him once again. We did,
but you
at
can't
the end of the show come out.
Oh,
and say it was official.
Yeah, that's right.
But you can't. I mean, to your point,
I was thinking about today's press conference, which is really when he talked about it and said it's not for the rest of the season necessarily. And for him to say that shows they're not closed off. And I think if they get to the last couple weeks of the season, they might just let him take it.
But to Sessler's point, if you say, as you said, the defining moment of his, if you say we're benching you and it's fully supported by everybody in the locker room, and then you go back to Manziel 2 or 3 weeks later, where does that leave you in the standing? It's a mess.
Yeah, he's in a messy situation, the coach, and so is the player.
You can't go
so
back to him
team.
At this point.
That's why, and this isn't piling on the Browns, Mark. It's if that job opens up in the offseason, like I would seriously, even though there's only a finite number of jobs to take in the NFL, it seems like you're always going to end up in a total S storm, no matter what, one way or the other. He's just the latest guy to get caught up in the web.
That is why I 100% would keep Mike Pettine for next season, because it can't get worse, and you got to give the first coach in a long time a chance to do more than 2 years.
Yeah,
that's,
I agree.
Honestly,
that's
I look at Ron Rivera, who was gone a couple seasons ago, and I look at they don't have Carolina's roster by any extent, but – you give this guy a chance because you're not going to get anyone to sign up for this job.
And if you can sweep the Ratbirds, at least you got something.
I like that.
You go get John Idzik, make him the new GM.
No, you do not do that.
It would take you 4 years to hire him.
Actually, that's not a bad idea. Maybe get Idzik and Marone, who are working together down there in Jackson, bring them together.
That is an awful idea by Greg.
We all took the Browns.
Really?
I'm going to take the Ravens. Why not?
Yeah,
I'm taking the Ravens.
Well, it's hard to pick a Matt Schaub team in 2015.
That's true. I would never pick.
I'm taking the Ravens.
You could draw up any team in the NFL, and I would pick them to beat Matt Schaub.
One sneaky thing that could turn this into an absolute disaster: Cleveland cut Terrence West, or they traded him to the Titans for a bag of spoons. He's now on the Ravens, and he's from Baltimore. The Ravens love Terrence West.
Wow.
They have a running back, and they said he's going to play. It is the most Browns thing ever that Terrence West runs for 150
Absolutely.
Yards and 2 touchdowns on this defense.
I still think the most Browns thing ever this season was injuring the crappy rookie quarterback to get to Ben Roethlisberger.
Mm-hmm. Wait, wasn't the release of Terrence West?
It was a trade.
The trade of Terrence West part of what enraged Mark so much that he gave up on the team?
No, it was not signing Chris Carter's son.
Or Kristen Michael.
He's currently working at a McDonald's.
I wanted to get Deion Carter, Kristen Michael, and run a complete spread offense.
Deron
Carter and with a complete spread offense with Manziel, Texas A&M style, and just
after 20 years, 30 years. That's
both of those players currently on practice squads.
All right.
I'm not in a solid place.
Michael Berger, you've said it all. And more.
Something's after 2 years, Sessler's not in a good place. Something's never changed.
And maybe when you come back again.
Great.
Listen, I would say, although for bit purposes, it would be funny to have you on in 2 years. But we enjoyed having you.
Sooner than that, maybe.
Yeah,
sooner than that.
Make it sooner than 2 years this time.
I look forward to it. Thanks, guys.
Wes, you have the final decision. Sooner than 2 years? 2 years.
Over under 2 years.
Or never. Three options.
I'll go with sooner.
All right.
Love it. I'm in.
Would have been awkward if you would have said never.
Yeah.
Hey, look, he earned it by besting me in the debate.
That's right. Mm.
There we go. Berger, next time you're on the show, we will talk about your appearance on Wheel of Fortune.
I can't wait. By the way, do you want to tell everybody when the television version of this show is
on?
Absolutely.
Ooh, I can't get out of here without a plug, right?
Here we go. The Around the NFL television show.
Thank you.
Is on 5 days a week, and this is when it's on. You ready?
Yeah.
6 p.m. Eastern, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday. A special 3-hour show on Thursday that begins at 2 p.m. Eastern.
You got that right.
And that's where Thursday you can find our Thursday night preview.
That's
from,
right.
The four.
Well, it hasn't been that normal, but it's going to be
moving
normal forward.
There is no Thursday show.
You had a little
hiatus.
You're back. It's why we juiced it up a little bit. You're fine. Everything's.
Do you see a rating spike when our
minute by minute ratings? If you look at it, they're so high they're almost unreadable. It's like you can't even.
It's the Super Bowl basically in the fourth quarter.
Exactly.
Synergy.
And we have Greg on sometimes yelling at Mike Silver, which is always a fun segment. and vice versa.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Two live
silver,
Jews.
Silver deserves
two
that.
Live Jews.
Two live Jews.
All right. That's it.
Thanks, guys.
Just want to wish both Berger happy Thanksgiving.
And the same to you guys as well.
All the colleagues, all the heroes, happy Thanksgiving. And all the listeners in America, happy Thanksgiving. I know it's not celebrated. A lot of our listenership is
Canada has Thanksgiving, but it's like a month before.
Well, you know, I'm going to say that happy Thanksgiving 2016 to Canada.
And 2017 to me when I'm back on the show next.
Absolutely. Everything covered. Thank you to Sydney and everyone behind the glass. This is Dan Hansis signing off for Quiet Storm, the mailman, Boyga, the boss, and Sydney behind the glass. Till Sunday!